Jaspreet Boparai and Don Nicholson with Greenwashed on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
Good morning, you're with Greenwash. Thank you for joining us today. And I hope you managed to catch some of that interview with Councillor Elizabeth Munt from the Sylvan District Council, because boy, oh boy, there was a lot in there. It wasn't just climate. There was a whole lot of political pushes. There were other agendas at play. And I'm going to be going back and listening to that one. And in fact, reading a bit more, because there's a whole lot of council paperwork on what's been happening around Lake Ellesmere and the environmentalism that has almost been weaponized, in my opinion. Or am I going too far, Don?
No. It's been under quite a lot of surveillance in recent years, a lot of people with a lot of opinions about it. I just found Elizabeth so passionate for her community that her story was well and truly probably in sync with how the community feels. So it'll be interesting to see how the wider district council treats it.
And talking about the Sylvan District Council, I recently came across a video with the climate czar, Rod Carr, speaking at the council about what they should be doing for making Sylvan thriving. But that's an issue for another day. If I go down that path, we would be here all morning. And there'd be other hosts coming along.
You subjected me to it as well. It was so sanctimonious. I mean, he's not stupid, but... these people that want to be ahead of everything, as if evolution doesn't happen without their knowledge, just annoy me.
But the point is, for all of this theory and all of that so-called knowledge that was disseminated by Rod Carr at that council, who picks up the tab? It is you. It is us. It's the ratepayers. It's the taxpayers. And boy, oh boy, are we paying for it. And which actually nicely segues for me into the climate crazy for this week. Because... again, so we'll stay with Canterbury for now. The Greater Christchurch area has boosted its electric fleet with 21 new zero-emission buses. This was the headline on Chris Lynch, local media player there in that area. And it says the buses will be used in Canterbury's urban fleet, bringing the total number of EVs to 65. Councillor Vicky Southworth is quoted saying that the urban bus fleet is now 26% electric and its progress with zero emission that she's really proud of. Now, we go to the costs. Who's paying for those? 10 of the new EVs were funded through New Zealand Transport Agency's Climate Emergency Response Fund program. Environment Canterbury's Public Transport General Manager, Stuart Gibbons, said, "We successfully bid for money from this fund, and we are really pleased to see it come to fruition in the form of these EVs." And other buses were funded through a combination of NZTA's fund and Environment Canterbury's 2023-24 annual plan and 2024-34 long-term plan. Wow. So NZTA has funded, I don't know the total price tag on these because I wasn't even going to dignify with me going down there and looking at it. But 10 of these buses have been funded by Land Transport, Waka Kotahi, NZTA, whatever you refer to them as. The same agency that cannot afford to fix our aging roading infrastructure or give us more funding out here in Southland, Don, because how many years has it been that we've heard that, oh, there's not enough money. There's not enough money. But there's enough money with NZTA for all the sort of virtue signaling nonsense.
Oh, under the climate change policies and the electrification of this country around that, net zero and all the rest of it. I mean, it's a panacea. You just have to ask and something falls in your lap. It's very disappointing. Very, very disappointing. We've talked about in the show often how legislative privilege in the end, there's perverse outcomes. And sadly, putting a hand out and having someone put something in it is half of the course in New Zealand at the moment in these sorts of industries. So, shouldn't surprise us. It's been happening for years. Just so disappointing that it continues. I mean, the market's not allowed to work, is it? The market's just not allowed to work on its own. They need all this legislative privilege.
Exactly. You know,
the Zero Carbon Act, all this sort of stuff.
This is not free markets operating. These are captured markets. This is crony capitalism. And it is going to hit the ones of us that are worst off in the pocket.
Well, and I was in the electricity sector, so I'm well aware of why they are playing their cards the way they do. There's a lifeline there. There's a lifeline. There's an expanding remit for them to put as much juice down the wires as possible. And if you haven't got wires big enough, you put bigger wires in and put more juice down. And of course, locally and nationally now, we know that AI and data centers are going to take a lot of the new juice. So, everyone's talking about the renewable energy, need, solar, wind, more hydro. Well, what's it going to feed? Cars, buses, and data centers.
This is part of a program that national government has sort of said. It began from the last government. It is still continuing under the new one. And this fund is called the CERF fund. And there's a whole lot of electric vehicle charging infrastructure, clean heavy vehicles, decarbonizing public transport fleet. So good on them for picking up the concession where they can. But remember, this comes at the cost of something else, be it the GP clinics, which are going to go under because there's not enough funding, be it surgeries that are being delayed, be it anything else. But this is what we prioritized.
Yeah, well, and as my hobby horse is, if I see this government spend one more dime on charging stations, assisting the rollout of what they keep saying, 10 or 11,000 charging stations around New Zealand. Yeah, I know the world's crazy then if they let that carry on. That's a real climate crazy.
Now to the next one, this one from the BBC UK. It says, council to serve only vegan food at future events. A council in West Yorkshire, it's the Calderdale Council, has made what it describes as a hugely symbolic move to only serve vegan food at future meetings and catered events. The proposal was put forth by the council's Labour deputy leader, Scott Patient, and was approved by the councillor at a meeting despite some opposition. There's some who oppose, saying that this is a unilateral decision to impose on people what they will be forced to eat. But the others are saying, even though it's small, it's usually symbolic. And that's what it is, isn't it? Symbols there. It's a significant act of climate leadership. And this will help the Calderdale Council to commit to achieving net zero CO2 emissions as a local authority and as a borough by 2038. And that's it. Don't think it's just the climate crazy in New Zealand. It is almost seems like a global plan.
He was a former chef. Mr. Patient is a former chef. And he is a Labour councillor for the Luddendon Foot. Perhaps could have been called the Luddite Foot. He talks about diversity, inclusion, and all that sort of stuff. I mean, there he is saying he wants diversity, and he wants, but again, he wants restricted food. So good on him, isn't he? What a hypocrite. What a hypocrite.
This climate crazy is catching on. So at the same time when this was happening, the Forest of Dean District Council, again in the UK, met on Thursday night to encourage how to get its staffers eating vegan food. It met on Thursday night, and guess what happened? Dozens of livestock farmers turned up to a council meeting the next day in tractors to protest against a plant-based food dictatorship. And the farmers outside, Lindley farmer Richard Morgan, said nature is just going to collapse if there's a move towards plant-based farming. And there's a whole lot of tractors there outside saying reject plant-based dictatorship. And then there is other councils that are going down the same direction. I can't wait to see this come to councils in New Zealand. Suddenly start, we do have universities trying to push this both in UK and abroad. So this craziness is catching.
Oh, yeah. If needs must, there you go. Can't wait for the SDC to do that to itself.
I bet you'll be there.
I just know it's vital for the planet to make sure that there's no meat ever produced again. We're just not allowed it. Just got to all stop it.
No, you say that in jest.
I do. I mean, I'm sick of these control freaks, but I just think the utter hypocrisy of that guy Patient, the councillor, and he gets a BBC news article about him. So hopefully he's getting the humiliation he deserves.
And talking of vegan food, you know, I can't miss the Olympics, because you remember about a month ago, Dawn and I had discussed the fact that they're trying to make this these crazy Olympics that have already gone on this morning, right when we began. So I'll not bore you anymore, that they're going to be zero emissions, so less air conditioning units and more vegan food on offer. And guess what's happening? Great Britain. The article on the NZ Herald ran that Great Britain snubbed Paris Olympic village food after complaints of raw food. So the British team have hit out saying that there have been shortages which are forcing them to bring an extra chef at their own cost. There is other countries also saying there's not enough food, especially not meat or eggs, and what is being served is sub-quality, not well-cooked. Gosh, these are the Olympics, for gosh's sake. These are top athletes. What are they doing here?
Well, you'd think it would be organized better, to be honest, but the British have clearly said they want something different. Maybe they just want their eggs and chips and, you know, steak eggs and chips that they have down at the local pub. I don't know. But it's all a bit precious, isn't it, Jaspreet? I mean, I've been to France, and, you know, it's supposed to be a gastronomic feast over there. There's places that the food isn't that great, but it's what you have there. I mean, it should have been organized better if you're supposed to cater for different palates, I assume. It just strikes me that, yeah, people can fix it. It's being remedied by the British team themselves, so good on them. They've gone to some restaurant, was it about 15 minutes further out, and they've got their own chef, and it'll be all sorted.
Yeah, but imagine if they could go to all that pains to put up that spectacle of an opening ceremony. Surely they could have ensured enough food for decent food for the athletes. Well,
they might have thought everyone likes steak tartare. Yeah. I don't know, because they talk about serving raw meat and causing shortages, which have forced them to bring an extra chef at their alternative restaurant. Yeah, steak tartare is not my bag, so I'm with them on that.
Not mine either. What else is there in the climate crisis? Yep, this headline on The Guardian that never fails to deliver content for Dawn and me. Yep. Extreme heat poses real risk to Spain's mass tourism industry, blares the headline. It says the public health advisor says higher temperatures caused by the climate crisis is posing danger for visitors who are not used to those temperatures. Now, most people, they go to Spain for some sun, don't they?
Especially people from Great Britain, from the Eastern Bloc countries, from Netherlands, Sweden, Finland. I've been in that area when the traffic from Northern Europe is heading to summer in Spain. You look at the number plates on the cars, and they are seriously from the countries I've just talked about. They go in droves. And so it'd be interesting to know if those cars are still going there this year in droves, or they've been frightened off by the heat. Frightened off. I mean, as I said to you a few weeks ago, I went to Ronda, which is the site of the oldest bullfighting ring in the world. Mm. And it was 51 degrees when we drove into Ronda that day. And the silly old Kiwis, we thought we could just go out on that in the middle of the day and it would all be good. Well, it didn't last long. The locals go out at night. You don't see them during the day. They go out at night and do their socializing and shopping. But the silly old Kiwis, we're on the tourist regime, and we had to get out and look. Oh, boy, it was a hard day. But
you survived?
Survived just fine. I mean, we went down to Estepona after that, and Malaga, and the Rock of Gibraltar, and it would have been in the 40 degrees plus every day. We survived.
The article is sort of contradicting itself. And at one point it says, the climate emergency is going to lead to tourism disappearing from parts of Spain in the future. It's a real risk because the big Spanish areas, the Solia Playa tourist areas, which are most dependent on tourism, it's going to have a huge impact on the economy. And these areas become less habitable with more heat waves and hotter nights. So it's saying there's that less tourists are going to come. And then in the next breath, it says that there is over tourism in Spain, which received a record 85.1 million international visitors last year, a 19% increase on 2022, which have led to large demonstrations across the country, including protesters in Canary Islands who are complaining about the presence of so many, as well as other activists who are seeking a limit on the number of cars coming on the island by ferry. So make up your mind. Are there less tourists coming? Are there more tourists coming?
Well, the funniest place we went to was because there used to be a television show called Benidorm. And it was all about British people going to the Mediterranean coast. Mm. We decided to call into Benidorm. This is about 2012. It was funny as a play. But again, it was so damn hot. The silly old Kiwis thought they could get out and about in it. But it was the best thing to do was just drink a lot and eat a lot and sleep a lot. But interestingly, it was full of British people bearing everything that they could within the bounds of decency and soaking up the rays. I mean, it was fantastic. It was very much like the television program. It was packed to the gunnels. I imagine it's packed to the gunnels again right now.
Funny. If they didn't have this, very honestly, what else would they have to write about, most of these reporters?
Yeah, well, they're giving us ammunition, so that's fine. Climate crazy ammunition. Have we got one more?
Yes, we do. And I'm hard pressed which one to choose, but okay, let's go with this one from the earth.com. Arctic warming plays a devastating role in accelerating global climate change. This is from the collaborative efforts of a dedicated team of international researchers who have found out that we are absolutely at another tipping point. Now, this word tipping point sort of tips me over every time. It is everywhere. It is bandied about in every sentence. And they're saying that the Arctic, the comprising of the tundra and the boreal forest, the northern circumpolar permafrost region around the Arctic, though it occupies just 15% of the Earth's soil area, it stores away a third of the world's soil carbon. And this storage is essential for regulating the planet, acting as a dual role of a carbon sink and a potential source. So the headline says the warming permafrost is going to be a silent assassin. Now, I don't know if people had a chance to listen to one of our guests about nearly 2 months ago now. We had Dr. David Dilley come on, and he had spoken. He's an American meteorologist. He also worked for the U.S. Air Force, speaking about the fact that by 2030, global warming is going to be dead in the water.
And, so can we all get some sleep then? Can we all get some sleep? All these climate czars, are they going to actually have sort of fallen off their perch by then and everything will be easy?
I can tell you, I hope I live long enough, Don.
Mm.
I hope I live long enough to applaud the demise of these.
This story isn't new, really. It's been around a long time about the sort of slow thawing of the tundra and what it may release. But, you know, it's a pertinent story. Just another one that tries to put another little concern into people's minds. We should be concerned about things around us, but when we're constantly bombarded with mis and disinformation on this stuff, no wonder there's anxious people in the world about environment and climate. No wonder that they're anxious.
If anyone has ever gone back and actually, read history, read the Earth's geography, or, hey, even read a book by Ian Plimer. And his reading is usually, I find it really easy. It's not, a hard-to-read scientific paper. There has been ice on this planet that we call our home on the Earth for less than 20% of its 5 billion years of existence. So if permafrost is melting, tell you what, the Earth survived without it. So out of the 5 billion years, just 1 billion years have had ice on the time. The Earth is towards the end of an interglacial, Mr. Plimer said, that commenced about 15,000 years ago in the Northern Hemisphere. The current interglacial is not as warm as the previous ones, which occurred when there were no human beings on Earth to emit carbon dioxide from the burning of these gasped fossil fuels. So, if you're so precious about glaciers, so precious about ice, Just remember, the Earth did just fine.
And you can save the world by putting one more offshore wind turbine up and killing a whole lot of whales. Doing the sonar, actually testing, I'm being facetious, but there's a very good article out, and it made me sit up. It was under David Wojcik's name through the Thomas Shepstone Substack, but it talks about this professor, Gerasolis, at Rutgers University, talking about the sonar testing for offshore wind turbine sites and how it is affecting the whales. Now, most of us would never have thought about that, but when you read the document, you think, yeah, there is something to see here. And you do wonder about sonar that's used for, regardless of whether it's wind or putting perhaps cables across the ocean or whatever, you do wonder what sonar has done to perhaps
the sea creatures.
The fish, the sea creatures, yeah. So it's a very, we tried to get this professor on, but he hasn't responded to us yet. But if we can, it'd be a great story, I think.
Yeah,
anyway,
so he's been tracking the fact that whale deaths on a certain coast of the US have gone up from about 2 a year to 20 a year. And there is something to be said about that.
Of course, in New Zealand sense, if we're going to have offshore wind, and I'm not sure that is going ahead, but off the coast of Taranaki, the whale watch community will be pretty upset, I imagine, whether it affects their businesses and they find more whale deaths. I don't know. This is all too much for me to analyze today, but I thought it was salutary to have that warning. Anyway, we need to go to the break. And after the break, we're going to have Dr. Doug Edmeads as a follow-up to Professor John Hickford and Jacqueline Routh's discussion about science funding. We'll get the third prognosis from Dr. Doug Edmeads. So that's after the break.
See you then, 2057. If you want to text us or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio.
Are you loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it, and right now they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.